Our first case, which is case number 61324. We have Eureka County versus the State of Nevada Division of Water Resources and the State Engineer et al. Okay, Ms. Peterson and Ms. Schroeder for the appellants, Mr. Wickstrom for the respondent. Okay, and I think we have a 60-minute argument on this one because of the complexity of the issues and all. So we'll go ahead and start with the appellant. And if you wish to reserve any time, would you let me know how much time you'd like to reserve?
May it please the court, Karen Peterson from Allison McKenzie Law Firm representing Eureka County. And I also did want to note on the record that Ted Butel, the district attorney for Eureka County, is here present in the courtroom. And also all three of the commissioners from Eureka County are present. And I will be arguing first for Eureka County and ask for 10 minutes of the 30 minutes. And then Ms. Schroeder is going to be arguing for Benson Echeverry, the other appellants. She'll take 10 minutes, and then we wanted to reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal. And then we also asked if we could come up here together for the rebuttal so that we're not wasting any of our rebuttal time.
Sounds like a good plan. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, you may proceed.
Okay. Thank you. Eureka County is not against this project. Eureka County is not against groundwater development up to the perennial yield in a basin. There's mining going on in Eureka County right now, and Eureka County has been involved in all the water rights appropriations in Eureka County for the last 20 to 30 plus years for modern mining projects. Eureka County is against these particular applications and the choices that this applicant made to locate its well fields in close proximity to existing water rights, and applying for 11,300 acre-feet of water rights for a totally consumptive use. None of that water is going to be returned to the groundwater basin. For a well field that's in a fairly concentrated area of the basin, when its own science shows and its own experts testified that there would be impacts to existing rights associated with this water pumping. And those impacts caused significant drawdown of the groundwater levels in the basin, and also were impacts to existing rights that wouldn't recover for hundreds of years.
Now, by significant, my understanding was, at least there was an indication that it would be potentially 2 acre feet over a period of 44 years.
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
That's not correct.
All right.
What the state engineer did is he failed to consider the full extent of the existing rights in the groundwater basin.
Which is 15,000. That's what I understood.
There are not, the perennial yield of the basin is 15,000.
Right, but there's some unallocated water rights that still exist.
There are unallocated water rights available to appropriate.
Okay.
There are existing certificated and permitted rights in the basin. There's existing domestic wells in the basin. There's claims of vested rights in the basin that the state engineer failed to consider in making his conflicts analysis under the statute and his mitigation analysis that he felt he was entitled to make. And the state engineer has a statutory obligation to protect existing rights, and he needs to consider the full extent of the existing rights, the claims of vested rights, which cannot be impaired under our statutes, and make sure when he's doing his conflict analysis that he is protecting those existing rights. And if you look at the certificates that are on record, in his books and records, as to what the amounts of those rights are, he didn't consider that. And there's a case out of New Mexico. We shepherdized the cases that we've cited in our briefs. But there's a case in New Mexico, Montgomery versus Lomas Altos. And that's, New Mexico has a statute very similar to Nevada's. It's an impairment statute. And the court there held that the state engineer had no authority to disregard his statutory authority to protect the full extent of existing rights. And in that particular case, there were some existing rights that hadn't been pumped for a long time, and the state engineer did not consider those under his impairment analysis. And the New Mexico Supreme Court held that the state engineer had no authority to disregard his duty under the law. So our claim is that there was unrefuted evidence by the applicant's own witnesses, there would be significant impacts to the lowering of the groundwater table.
And what extent exactly? Could you explain to what extent specifically?
The lowering of the groundwater table?
Yes.
The applicant submitted a groundwater model that simulated groundwater pumping of the 11,300 acre feet at its proposed well locations. And it showed, based on the maps that the state engineer cited in the ruling, that there would be just the 10-foot area of drawdown was basically the size of Lake Tahoe. If you look, it's 200 square miles. If you look at the maps, the drawdown maps that are cited by the state engineer in the ruling. And that's not even a lower quantity of drawdown, because there's lots of seeps and springs that aren't 10 feet deep. So that doesn't even consider all the existing rights that are within a 5-foot drawdown contour. Or in the Campert case, the U.S. Supreme Court recognized that there could be impacts to levels of 2 feet, or, you know, that impacted the pupfish. So the state engineer needs to consider, when he's making his conflicts analysis, the full impact to all existing rights, because that's his statutory duty. And again, the state engineer didn't even consider the claims of vested rights in the basin that were set forth in this inventory that was submitted by the applicants, page after page after page of claims of vested rights, or rights that don't show that there is any certificate or permitted right on file with the state engineer's office, but there's use of these surface water resources. The state engineer made a determination that because of the groundwater level declines, any of the domestic wells and the seeps and springs that were in hydraulic connection with the groundwater table were subject to being impacted. And that's in the ruling. And it's not a disputed, we're not arguing that determination that was made by the state engineer. And he describes in the ruling the extensive amount of the drawdown also. Another error that is involved in this case is the fact that the state, nobody disputes that the state engineer there has the power that's allowed to him under NRS 534.110. Nobody disputes that there's a legislative declaration that under certain circumstances there can be mitigation as a result from municipal or quasi-municipal or industrial pumping that it affects domestic wells. But the state engineer didn't cite to any of those statutes in his ruling. And I have to assume he didn't cite to those statutes in his ruling because he didn't think that they applied. He cited to the conflict statute, NRS 533.3702. And he made a determination, notwithstanding the experts' quantified opinions of quantified impacts to existing rights, that there was no conflict because the impacts could be mitigated, therefore avoiding the conflict under the statute. But he made no cite to the record in his ruling as to what evidence he relied upon for that finding. He made no explanation of his reasoning for that conclusion, and he did not define at all in the ruling what mitigation meant. And the district court compounded that error because the district court determined that because there was nothing in the statutes, NRS 533 or NRS 534, prohibiting the state engineer from determining based on his analysis that there were impacts, but they could be mitigated, and therefore it wasn't a conflict under the statute. The district court determined that because there was nothing prohibiting that analysis in the statutes, that the state engineer had the authority to grant these applications. And state agencies in the state of Nevada do not have all the authority that's not prohibited in their statutes. The rule of law is that state agencies only have the powers that are specifically granted to them in the statutes. And the district court made no determination that there was any express statutory language that allowed the state engineer to do this, nor did he make a determination that there was any inferred power that the state engineer had to do this. So he applied the incorrect standard of law as to what the limits of a state agency's powers were.
And doesn't that distinguish Nevada's statutory scheme from, say, Montana or Oregon or some of the others that do have some express mitigation authority plus some statutory specification as to the requirements of that authority and how it should be exercised? I mean, the point is it's legislative.
That's exactly right. If the legislature wanted the state engineer to be able to decide that impacts could be mitigated and therefore there was not a conflict, they would have expressly given that power to the state engineer.
And indeed they did in 534, the statute you referenced a moment ago that was not relied on for municipal or industrial.
Right. And
although that's a groundwater, but...
Right, that's a groundwater statute. And there is an important point that you need to consider, that there's arguments being made by the respondents here that you can substitute under that statute, 534.110, groundwater for surface water. And there are a lot of state surface water decrees here in Nevada. There's also a federal decree, surface water decree, that incorporates Nevada substantive law for change applications in the federal decree. And if there's a determination made in this case that surface water can be replaced by groundwater, if there's an impact, that is going to impact and turn the decree world upside down.
Great. Okay. Did you want to reserve the balance of your 10% to your schedule?
I would. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, Chief, can we ask Ms. Peterson to comment on the United States Federal District Court case, U.S. versus Alpine Land, on the subject of mitigation authority?
Yes, you would like me to do that right now?
Yes, ma'am, please.
Thank you. Your Honor, that case was very different than the facts of this case. In that case, number one, the district court didn't rely on the 534.110. Mm-hmm. What they upheld that state engineer doing in that case was protecting the source, the surface water source, so that the change application that was approved in that case did not impact the surface water source, and all the senior water right holders remained whole. So that there were conditions that were put on that allowed the surface water to remain intact, the senior water right holders to get their water rights. Not what's happening in this case, that the junior water right holders can get their water rights at the expense of the senior right holders. And so that's the distinction.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Schroeder.
Laura Schroeder for the Etcheverry family. I have Matthew Etcheverry with me, as well as the Bensons, Ken and Pat Benson, who are also with me today. My co-counsel, Teresa Uhr, at the table. May it please the court. 3M starts with three. So I'm going to concentrate on three words that I think summarize all the arguments before you today. One, existing. Two, conflicts. Three, mitigation. Ms. Peterson talked about existing rights. She talked about the fact that the state engineer's order did not discuss, identify those existing rights. The state engineer was required to identify those rights. The problem here, Your Honors, is that time has passed. We are no longer in a situation in Nevada where we can take just a cursory look and look at the perennial yield and say, oh, wow, we have this many acre feet left. We can issue some water rights for those. We can't do that anymore. We have to be specific. We have to identify the rights that are in conflict, just like the statute says. Existing rights. The statute 533.370(2) requires the state engineer to shall reject the application and refuse to issue the requested permit. He has to identify those conflicts. His order doesn't do that.
Wasn't there some concession that there was a conflict for certain particular springs?
Right. My client's mud springs are going to be totally decimated. And that takes us to the next word, conflicts. The state engineer's order did say, in a generalized way, there are going to be conflicts, but not specific. And again, we are past the time in Nevada where we can just say, hey, there's not a conflict because there's still a few acre feet left in the perennial yield. We've got to identify those rights that are going to be impacted and those rights that are going to be in conflict. Yes, the state engineer did say there are certain rights that are going to, springs that are going to dry up, but, oh well, we'll look at the next word, mitigation. Before I get to mitigation, though, I want to look at the statutes that define conflicts, and I'm going to look at those specifically in the groundwater statute context, which is what we argued in the district court. 534.1104 and 5. 4 gives the state engineer the right to allow a reasonable lowering. But it goes on to say that the state engineer has to determine what that reasonableness is. The state engineer didn't do that here. He didn't say 50 feet lowering was okay, 100 feet, a dried up spring, 2 dried up springs, 100 vested rights impacted. It said nothing. It could have said what that reasonable lowering was. And the statute in 4 goes on to say, in determining the reasonable lowering of the static water level in a particular area, the state engineer, again, the word shall consider the economics of the pumping of the water. There is nothing in the state engineer's order about the economics of the pumping or what lowering the water table will do to the present appropriators. Number 5, 534.1105, goes on to say, water level can be lowered at the point of diversion of a prior appropriator with a condition, so long as protectable interest in existing domestic wells and the rights of holders of existing appropriations can be satisfied under express conditions. There are no express conditions in the state engineer's order. He didn't find what a reasonable lowering was. He didn't find what would satisfy the existing appropriators. He didn't find the express conditions. He simply ignored the whole statute.
I understand, counsel, your argument that the state engineer's office doesn't satisfy or ruling doesn't satisfy some of the conditions you're talking about, but does the language you've referenced in the statute imply the authority of the state engineer to incorporate mitigation in considering conditions?
Very good question. Goes to my third word.
I'm glad you thought so.
Very good question. It goes to the word mitigation. Mm-hmm. And as Ms. Peterson pointed out, and as Your Honor suggested earlier, mitigation is only mentioned, we looked it up in 533 and 534, 4 separate times, the word mitigation. Once, twice in regards to domestic wells, and that's at 533.0241B, which is the policy of the legislature to protect domestic wells, allowing mitigation for them, which is expressed at 534.1105. So we have mitigation mentioned twice in those two domestic well contexts. Then we have it mentioned two more times related to the counties in 533.4385 and in 533.353. In 5385, It's talking about protecting counties against exporting water. Not something we're discussing here, but mitigation, the word mitigation is used. There can be a mitigation plan. The state engineer can create one for protecting the county where the water is going to be taken from. In the second context, a new statute is talking about the counties being able to participate in a 3M plan. Nowhere else in the legislation does it talk about a 3M plan. So we don't know what a 3M plan is, what it consists of, or how it's used. It's just there.
In this water rights been permitted in this basin that included as part of the condition mitigation?
Not that I know of, Your Honor.
What about other basins throughout the state? Hasn't the state engineer, in granting other permits, provided for mitigation in its interpretation of the water code for years?
In a recent case that was issued by Your Honors concerning Las Vegas, the Southern Nevada Water Authority, you talked about a 3M plan. That case came forward. You issued that. I think it's an unpublished decision after this case was briefed. But that case talks about a 3M plan, and you sent that one back. So I think that we need to be specific, and that's what I'm saying here. Nevada, it's past the time, and I think mitigation is probably something we're going to have to look at. But we have a tool already here. It's called express conditions. The state engineer could have had express conditions. Now, they've argued that this mitigation plan is an express condition, but our briefing showed that it's just a plan to make a plan. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Yeah, you have just under 10 minutes left for rebuttal. Okay. Counsel, you wish to could you state your name for the record, please?
Absolutely. May it please the Court. My name is Cassandra Joseph. I'm with the Nevada Attorney General's Office. I represent the state engineer, Jason King, as well as the Division of Water Resources. For the record, I'd like to note that the state engineer, Jason King, is here as well as deputy state engineers. I plan to speak for 15 minutes and then counsel for intervener for the next 15.
You may do so.
Beginning with the conflicts issue, the law requires that the state engineer avoid conflicts, and that's exactly what he did here. NRS 533-370, subpart 2, should be interpreted to allow mitigation of conflicts.
But doesn't the language itself, isn't it very clear that if there is a conflict, there shall not be any allocations?
The point here is that no conflict will ever occur.
But wasn't there a concession at some point that there are certain conflicts? That's a concern for me.
There were facts that supported that there would be impacts to existing rights. And to be specific, the evidence showed that it was likely that two small springs would be impacted, but not conflicted, because if the state engineer is allowed for mitigation, those conflicts will never be realized.
That's assuming mitigation can be applied.
That's assuming that mitigation can be applied. And the reason that mitigation should be able to be applied is because it's found in the statutory scheme, and it also makes sense in terms of balancing the needs of Nevada citizens. Starting with the statutory scheme, mitigation is recognized explicitly in 533.024. Therefore, the legislature has shown that it recognizes mitigation is a viable option to avoid conflicts. In that statute, it pertains specifically to domestic wells. But from a practical standpoint, there is no reason for the legislature to allow mitigation for domestic wells and not allow mitigation for other existing rights.
So what do you do with the proposition that when the legislature speaks specifically in a particular context to an issue and uses a term and does not use it elsewhere, that we are to infer that differentiation was intentional and significant?
or ascribe significance to it.
In the next section that I was going to address, which is 534110(4), the legislature allows mitigation. It doesn't use the word mitigation.
Was that relied on by the state engineer in this case?
It was relied on by the state engineer in this case.
And you would dispute Ms. Peterson's representation on that point?
I do, because in the ruling, the state engineer is allowed to allow for a lowering of the static water table. That's what is happening when you pump groundwater. Necessarily, the water table will lower. The legislature in 534110(5) explicitly says that that is allowed so long as existing water rights are protected under express conditions. Express conditions are mitigation. What else could express conditions reasonably mean in that?
And was that the purpose for the 3M plan and the committee that was put together to determine what the mitigation could be? At this point, we don't know. And perhaps the state engineer couldn't specifically say, and it's a conditional grant at this point, subject to the 3M plan, and whether it would be appropriate or adequate.
You're right, Your Honor. The state engineer conditioned the permit on mitigation, and he did so by requiring that a 3M plan be implemented and that it be approved by the state engineer before any pumping would ever occur.
So at this point, it wasn't necessary in your view that specific mitigation needed to be set forth at this point?
It was not necessary, and that is because the state engineer found, based on substantial evidence, that mitigation was possible. There was no requirement that the state engineer find what those specific mitigation measures would be at the time that the permit was issued. The state engineer, this was a factual determination.
Doesn't that make it, though, essentially unreviewable? I mean, take, for example, and I may be not fully faithful to this record, but take, for example, Mud Spring, which is going to be dried up, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of dispute on that. If you say you're going to make a condition that there be mitigation, and we hear talk in this record that perhaps somebody's going to drive a tank full of water to the cattle, and then we have a dispute whether or not water freezes and the cattle can't drink it and they need it now, not in the time it takes a truck to get there, who determines the sufficiency of that? I mean, is it a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush? I'm a little concerned about this concept that we'll have mitigation, and it's a multisyllabic word, but what exactly does that signify to the person who is depending on that spring that he or she or it have rights to and have historically exercised?
I would submit, Your Honor, that the best person to make that factual determination of whether or not mitigation is possible is the state engineer, given his expertise.
How do we review possible? What is the possibility of mitigation for that mud springs?
There was substantial evidence in the record that the springs that were likely to be affected could easily be mitigated, and that substantial evidence includes. So let's stick with mud springs. There are two springs that were likely to be affected, Mud Spring and Lone Mountain Spring. Both springs are estimated to flow at about 1 gallon per minute, which for the record and to put in perspective is less than the amount of water that is estimated that a domestic household uses over the course of a year. We're talking about small springs. The state engineer found that those springs could easily be mitigated, and appellants agreed that they could be easily mitigated for a number of reasons.
Before you get there, don't use the word mitigation for a moment. Describe for me what concretely would be done, and what does this record show that we can assure ourselves, assuming mitigation is available, that it's reasonable?
Sure. What would be done in this case with Mud Spring is a well would be drilled and a pump installed so that water can actually flow to the surface. And in fact, more water will be allowed to be provided to the water right holders through mitigation, because that will allow the full quantity of water
which is entitled under the right, which is 10 acre feet, to be realized instead of a spring that is flowing currently at gallon per minute, which is significantly less. So mitigation in this case will actually increase
the amount of water. So when would that occur, when the well dries up or before it dries up?
I'm sorry, I couldn't.
When would that occur?
The drilling of the well? It's been offered to be done now, and it will be done before any pumping would occur.
And where in the record would I find that's a condition of this?
That the permit is conditioned upon mitigation. Therefore, before any pumping can begin, the 3M plan needed to be approved and was approved. Pursuant to the 3M plan, any mitigation efforts will be initiated at the time the adverse impacts are recognized, because the two springs that are likely to be impacted already show that there are likely to be adverse impacts. That mitigation will occur before any pumping is conducted.
Also, let me ask a simple question. Why didn't the engineer just withhold approval until the mitigation plan was presented in full, so we had substantial evidence in the record?
Your Honor, the state engineer's ruling that mitigation was possible was based on substantial evidence and a full-blown mitigation plan that was approved at the time of issuing the permit was not necessary. It was not necessary because mitigation was possible. In order to know that mitigation is possible.
Possible?
Not only possible.
How do we know that it's possible? If he had approved it, it would not have been conditioned on this conditional plan being developed. That's the way the language, as I understand it, was in this.
Your Honor, in addition to there already being substantial evidence in the record that mitigation for these springs that are likely to be affected is possible, the state engineer conditioned the permit on the approval of a 3M plan. Now, the state engineer is the best person with the most expertise in the area familiar with familiarity with the law, of water law, to know whether mitigation is possible. Now, to know that mitigation is possible, you don't need to have delineated exactly how that mitigation is going to occur. But in this case,
isn't it important to delineate how that might occur? You've indicated that possibly you will put pumps in to do that. In other cases, we've talked about water that is limited to the valley, the source area only. It cannot be brought in from other locations. Wouldn't it have been prudent to have done that when they granted the permit, opposed to making it a condition sometime in the future on a maybe? There was a recognition of an impact. And you're saying, well, if they knew that, then they know this. Well, from the record, it doesn't seem to be that clear.
Your Honor, because the permit is conditioned on the approval of a mitigation plan before any pumping will ever occur, there cannot be a conflict before there would never be a conflict realized. And for a moment,
I'm illusionary in terms of what they've granted.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. And I think that because in this case we have a 3M plan that was eventually submitted and approved by the state engineer before pumping has ever begun. Pumping still has not begun. And therefore, I would submit that to the extent that there was error by not having an approved 3M plan at the time that the permit was issued, it was harmless because we've got a 3M plan that is now approved and is now before the parties. And each of the parties, all of the parties, have had a full and fair opportunity to review that mitigation plan.
But the determination ultimately it goes to the state engineer, but it has to be a unanimous, it's a committee that is comprised of one side of this dispute primarily, correct? In other words, the WAC and the Water Advisory Committee and Technical Advisory Committee, the memberships, Eureka Moley and the county, as well as the state engineer, and two members nominated by Diamond Natural Resources Protection. But the actual ranchers and farmers and water rights holders historically they don't have a seat on that committee. Is that right? They can come and talk and they can read,
Your Honor, they may come and they may provide input. The Eureka
they don't
County
have a seat structurally on the committee.
At this time, there are two groups that represent the farming community in Eureka County who are on the committee. They are members of the committee, so it's a cooperative effort that has allowed input not only from Eureka County but from the members of that society specifically.
And how is a vote determined as to whether or not the particular implementation of a particular aspect of this plan? Who has the vote?
Each member of the committee has a vote, and what's important is
and it has to be unanimous?
The vote has to be unanimous. The state engineer at any time can override a decision by the three in plan committees. Moreover, any party can bypass the three in plan process altogether and go directly to the state engineer should an issue arise that they want the state engineer to address, and there's nothing in the three in plan that would prevent them from doing so. One other issue I'd like to address, as I see my time is quickly running out, is that the allowing mitigation in order to avoid conflicts is not only consistent with the statutory scheme here, but it also allows the state engineer to sensibly balance the needs of the Nevada citizens. What we're talking about, again, is 11,300 acre-feet of water that's unappropriated. It's available for use in this basin because it's likely to affect two springs that can easily be mitigated. So what we're talking about here is a balance. And to prohibit mitigation as a matter of law in order to avoid conflicts will tie the state engineer's hands and prevent the state engineer from being able to conduct this kind of reasonable and sensible balance.
Well, given the point ultimately that if there's an ability to mitigate, there is no conflict.
That is the point. If there is ability and the state engineer is allowed to mitigate. Now, the state engineer does not take mitigation lightly, but there are instances where mitigation may be necessary, and the state engineer, and nothing in the statutory scheme should prevents that. Did you have a question?
I did. Given the uncertainty of the statutory basis for mitigation, it would seem like this court should address this subject by opinion. If we did, what would that opinion look like, in your view, in our assessment of the mitigation authority? Is it the result of an implied authority contained within statutory language, and if so, which one? You would concede that it isn't express, at least not beyond domestic wells and a couple of other references. So what would be the structure of the opinion that concludes that this authority exists?
Your Honor, I believe that the order should find that 533.370 subpart 2 impliedly allows mitigation to avoid conflicts, and that is found in by implication in 534.110 sub 5, which states that there can be a reasonable lowering of the water table to protect existing rights under express conditions, and that those express conditions may include a condition on the permit that requires mitigation, much like in the Alpine case.
Other than this case, is there any legislative history, or are there any other cases, or has the state engineer published any regulations that would demonstrate agency interpretation of this issue that the court could look to?
Your Honor, there is not that I am aware of, but I would note that the state engineer's interpretation of the statute as being one that he administers, his interpretation is entitled to some deference by this court.
Right, but the deference isn't untethered. What would be the source? That's why I asked about other regulations or perhaps other contested cases that the court could examine to determine that this has been a consistent and long-standing approach by the state engineer. I mean, one of the things that's troubling about our water code is that it has a long, long history in our state without a lot of changes or references, so a lot of unwritten rules percolate within the state engineer's office, and those who've served as counsel to the state engineer, I think, see that more often than others. But what would be the tether that we would examine to determine this interpretation?
Your Honor, I think this also addresses an earlier question that you asked, and that is, practically speaking, mitigation is going on, and it's occurring where there are projects, and as a result of those projects, there are impacts, and the state engineer is addressing those impacts through mitigation, through specific measures that we've talked about, which is drilling wells for existing water right holders so that their rights may be satisfied.
So what is the effect on other permits that have been issued that rely on mitigation should the court determine that mitigation is not part of the statutory scheme and within the state engineer's authority?
I think that the effect of prohibiting mitigation at all would have a not only a severe effect on the amount of water that's available for appropriation across the state and in Cobie Valley in particular, but that it would affect other permits that potentially affect other permits that have already been issued and where mitigation is occurring.
Thank you.
I have one more question. In your analysis in response to Justice Hardesty's questions about what an opinion would look like, I'm troubled by the concept of express conditions are permitted in 534.1104 and the disconnect between an express condition that says if you're going to do this, for example, you need to drill a well to replace Mud Creek. That's an express specific condition, but a general idea that we're going to have a mitigation board comprised variously and it will deal with things as they arise in the future. Is that truly an express condition? Does that semantically fit?
I think it does, Your Honor, and the express condition is found in 534.110 sub 5, and what it says is that you can lower the static water level as long as existing rights are protected under express conditions. Now, express conditions, in the case of these two springs that were likely to be affected, and again,
I'm not just talking about those.
I understand, yeah. In the case of what I'm trying to distinguish is that in the case of the two springs where it was like where impacts were likely to occur, it would have been very simple to say for these two springs, drill a deeper well and install a pump. However, there wasn't an opportunity to really discuss with the water right holders at that time what they would have liked because they opposed mitigation. Now, I think with respect to impacts that are not expected or unlikely, that's particularly where conditioning a permit on a 3M plan makes sense because you don't know specifically what the impacts are going to be until you have a lot more information, which is obtained through the robust monitoring that's required under the 3M plan. So it would be premature to set some sort of mitigation delineation as to each possible effect until after more information is available, which isn't going to be available until the 3M plan is implemented.
So the conditions in the 3M plan can always be challenged at some point to see if they were adequate?
To see if?
If they were adequate.
Yes. That is correct. It's built into the framework.
All right.
And by the way, the backstop is that if nothing works, pumping stops. So the existing rights will always be protected because if all goes as unexpected and mitigation were not to work, the pumping stops.
Okay. Thank you very
Council,
much.
Shouldn't we be concerned, though, as you just iterated, that there was a concession that they didn't know what the absolute value would be until pumping began? There were iterations put forward as to a 3M plan, but there was no vetting of that. There was no evidentiary type hearing or contested hearing as to this plan. But you're saying that at worst we can just stop pumping?
The plan was all parties had an opportunity to be fully and fairly heard on the 3M plan. It's one of the cases in this consolidated appeal.
Was there a formal evidentiary hearing held or was just information submitted to the engineer and he made his decision?
There was not a full evidentiary hearing, but I would submit that the state engineer and his staff, as the expert in this area of law, are the most and best equipped to make the factual determination.
I understand your position, but my question simply was there an evidentiary hearing?
There was no evidentiary hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Counsel, we'll get you up here. I'm sorry for the interruption, but go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Francis Wickstrom appearing on behalf of the intervener, Eureka Mali and Kobe Valley Ranches. A conflict means that a prior user cannot get his water due to the later use by a junior right holder. There's one thing that is absolutely clear in this case, one express condition that is immutable, unchallengeable, and that is Mr. Echeverry is entitled to get the full measure of his water right as a condition of my client pumping. My client has acknowledged that from the beginning. The state engineer has made it clear from the beginning. And so the mechanics of what the particular 3M plan would be, whether it would be a well with a solar-powered pump, whether it would be a well brought in from one of the nearby wells, those are the mechanics that are best left to the state engineer. The principle is a prior rights holder is absolutely entitled to get his water before a junior, such as my client, can take water. Here we've got a unique situation. We've got two springs at issue that are in the bottom of Kobe Valley. So they intersect the groundwater at the lowest point. One of them is Mr. Echeverry's spring, Mud Spring. The other is Lone Mountain Spring, which is owned by the BLM. And the BLM has accepted a mitigation plan, and so they're satisfied. So this presents a textbook case for you because we know that there are 15,000 acre-feet of water that the perennial yield of Kobe Valley. We know that only 1,100 of those acre-feet had been previously appropriated. So that leaves almost 14,000 acre-feet of water available in Kobe Valley.
Well, that doesn't account for those unallocated rights that are being considered now.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The state engineer has applications for rights that haven't been addressed. So there's other rights out there that are potentially affected as well.
And there's 26, even after this ruling, there's still 2,600 acre-feet of water that were unappropriated after this ruling. So there's a lot of water
left. Taking into account all the ones that were pending. That's my question. That's what I'm trying to determine.
No, that is available perennial yield. And I don't know, Your Honor, the volume of the pending applications, but I have a strong feeling it's nowhere near 2,600 acre feet to be there. So you've got a situation where you drill a well, like my client does, and you start pumping. And as the court well knows, you start to get a cone of depression, and that expands outward depending on the geology and the hydraulics of the underground. When you've got somebody at the lowest point in the valley like Mr. Echeverry, what it would mean, the policy consideration for this court is if you say that the state engineer's ruling, if you set it aside, that means that no one can come in and take advantage and make beneficial use of that unappropriated water in Kobe Valley, because by definition, anybody who sinks a well in Kobe Valley is going to, as the district court found, is going to depress the groundwater level somewhat, and it's going to affect the people at the low end of the chain. So,
well, but what is the difference there? I mean, if you had an express condition, and we follow it through and we agree with the attorney for the state that you can attach an express condition, for example, drill Mr. Echeverry a new well to replace his spring, mm-hmm. that will do that. You could make that an express condition. But you wanted more than that here because it was probable, as I understood this record, that there would be other impacts that would have to be have conditions imposed on them when you fully understood what your water removal was doing. To avoid conflicts, you'd have to further attach additional conditions like the well for Mr. Echeverry. To me, it would be easy if we just had a condition on Mr. Echeverry's well that you put in a domestic well instead of drying up his spring in order to proceed. But you want a sort of a carte blanche that down the road there may be other people in Mr. Echeverry's situation and we'll have mitigation that will, it's kind of expanded express conditions down the road. And so my concern is statutorily, how do I get mitigation out of the express conditions that 534.110 authorizes?
Your Honor,
I think
that the authority is an inherent authority and implied authority, as the United States Supreme Court ruled many years ago. The power to deny an application necessarily includes the power to conditionally grant it. And the U.S. District Court here in Nevada ruled the same thing, that Alpine Land case, that the Nevada State Engineer has the inherent authority to condition based on his authority to deny the application. And so to get to your second question, which is the express conditions, yes, of course, the State Engineer could say that. The indications are is that that's exactly what he's going to say, is put a well here, and we have to do it. But again, those are the mechanics. The express condition that is important is that my client's right to pump water is conditioned and subject to existing rights. And the irony of this, as the counsel for the state pointed out, is the evidence in this record is that this spring has been dry at times. I'm talking about mud springs. Float at less than 1 gallon per minute. Other times it's gone up to about 5 gallons a minute. Mr. Echeverry's right is for 6.7 or 6.8 gallons per minute. He's never realized that because of nature. But we know that because he has a prior existing right to 6.7 gallons per minute of water, we have to give him that full amount as a price for pumping. My client accepts that. And then as to the third part of your question, Your Honor, was what about other springs? And the state engineer said, on the evidence in this record, we know that two springs are likely to be impacted, Mud and Lone Mountain, but there are other springs in this area that could be impacted. And since we don't know, I'm going to impose a basin-wide, actually even the mitigation requirement, the monitoring requirement spills over into the next water basin, which is Diamond Valley. I'm going to require that you get baseline information on all of these.
But, Counsel, doesn't that reflect to the line of cases that come out of Colorado where they do allow mitigation, where they look at adequacy of replacement water and they look at the beneficial use in terms of they're looking at long-term and how it affects where that water is coming from and require that to be involved also in the plan?
Your Honor, I think we all would agree that maybe some additional clarity in the legislation would be helpful to all of us. But
well, we don't have it. We're trying to make it out of whole cloth this day. So if you want to address it, I'd like to hear.
Your Honor, as the amici point out in their brief, even before we had statutory water law and the courts were adjudicating water rights, the concept of mitigation, and I don't think they used the term mitigation, but what the courts effectively did is that they would balance the water rights of different holders so that prior users could be protected. I see that I'm out of time. Thank you very much,
Mr. Wickstrom. Okay, you have 9 minutes and 49 seconds. Counsel, so you're both going to come up at the same time. It creates an issue with our court recorder. So before you speak, if you could announce who's speaking, and then we can make a proper record of the rebuttal argument then. Okay, so you can go in whatever order you want.
Okay, thank you. I'll go first. Karen Peterson, for the record. There is no authority for mitigation in the regulations, in the statutes, and the state engineer has never, I pointed it out in our opening argument before the state engineer has never ordered a mitigation plan like this when there were quantified impacts to existing rights. He's only ordered a mitigation plan in the past, a 3M plan in the past, when the hydrology was unknown and they didn't know what the impacts would be.
Again, explain to me, if you're taking into account mitigation, and if mitigation is possible, why is there a conflict, first of all?
In this particular situation,
The issue has to do with the prior appropriation doctrine and the fact that these are surface water rights, and you're substituting groundwater rights for those surface water rights. And under the prior appropriation doctrine, the hierarchy is in the source, the common source, and you are allowing the junior appropriator to use the senior appropriator's water rights and making the senior appropriator change his use of water, his source of water, how he uses his water, how he gets his water, so that the junior appropriator can get his water. I call it Padino, prior appropriation doctrine in name only. It is not the prior appropriation doctrine. The prior appropriation doctrine does not make the senior water right holder lose his right so that the junior right holder can use a water right and upset the whole seniority system in the state of Nevada and under the prior appropriation doctrine. That is not what the prior appropriation doctrine is. This court needs to clarify what that is in this case, because those senior rights are entitled to protection, and they are not. They don't have to go to the state engineer constantly to protect their right. The state engineer is supposed to be protecting their right by not granting applications in the first place that conflict with their existing rights. That's the prior appropriation doctrine, which nobody seems to be discussing in this case.
And I would say, Laura Schroeder, that if you want to move away from the prior appropriation doctrine, what this mitigation plan is suggesting is reasonable use, which Colorado adopts in some cases, and so that everybody shares the different sources. So they're asking my client, Mr. Echeverry, to move off his surface water springs and go to groundwater. Now, the mitigation statute on domestic wells says that the applicant on the domestic wells, or the user of the domestic wells, because it's not a permitted use, has to agree to go to a new well. He has to agree. In this 3M plan, it's not an agreement. We're just going to give him a well, and you can use it whenever you'd like. The 3M plan is 12 pages, and there is no express conditions in the whole 12 pages. I specifically would ask you to look at the last conditions in this, which it starts with mitigation on page 10 of 12, and you can look at section G, for instance. To ensure the wildlife has the water, they're going to give them replacement water sources. Well, the wildlife people have agreed to that. So, hey, that's not talking about any express conditions, though, because we don't know where it's going to happen, in what use it's going to happen. It's not express at all. It's just that we're going to give them the water. Also in H, it talks about the committee is going to determine what vested claims there are and reserved rights there are after there's been adverse impacts. And it provides that this committee is going to decide those adverse impacts, which is completely in opposite of what Ms. Joseph said. She said that the state engineer is the best person to determine this.
Karen Peterson, for the record. One of the other points I wanted to address was the concept that under our position that no one's able to take advantage of the perennial yield of the basin. And that is absolutely not true. We've advocated, as the statute advocates, that all applications are looked at on a case-by-case basis, so that you're looking at the individual applications, the existing rights that are in the area of where the point of diversion are for the individual applications, what the particular qualities of the basin are, the hydrology and the geology. And our position is, for this project, you cannot have existing rights and in your project, subsequent project, as a junior appropriator, propose to put in wells that are in close proximity to existing rights so that you dry up those existing rights. In New Mexico, the court there that has an impairment statute similar to ours, they've declined to issue a bright line test. They've indicated that under their impairment statute, which is similar to ours, you should look at it on a case-by-case basis, taking into consideration the specifics and the individual factual characteristics of each case, and that you may have different resolutions to the impairment question based upon the individual facts of each case. So that's what we're articulating in Eureka County's position is that as the statute, NRS 533.370, requires a state engineer to look at each application individually on a case-by-case basis, based upon the hydrology and geology specifics to the basin, that's the position this court should take.
And Laura Schroeder, I think I want to just underline what Ms. Peterson has said, because that's what the statute allows. It says express conditions. It allows on a case-by-case basis, with the expertise that Ms. Joseph acknowledges, that the state engineer is in the best position to establish that. Not as Section I in the 3M plan says, that this committee is going to decide on a case-by-case basis what mitigation is appropriate.
But doesn't the state engineer ultimately have the determination as to whether or not that's going to be appropriate or adequate?
That's right. The committee meets once a year. I don't know.
And there's no provision to call a special meeting?
Well, I'm sure that there are. But when my clients don't have any water for their cattle, it's going to happen now. It's not going to happen a year from now or 2 years from now when the technical committee gets their monitoring done. Now, when my clients come to me and say, what do I do, Ms. Schroeder, now that my water's dried up? I say, well, there's this 3M plan. Now, Ms. Joseph has suggested I can go straight to the state engineer and, I guess, make a call on my water. But is the state engineer going to say, hey, here's the 3M plan. You didn't exhaust your administrative remedies. You didn't go to the committee and say you wanted some mitigation. You didn't come to me with your mitigation plan, and I'm the senior user. What am I going to advise him? Just stick with it. 2 or 3 years from now, we'll get you back some water. What happens when... I want to look at the opening brief here because we've only been talking about Mud Springs, and there is some evidence in the record that talks about this being much wider spread than just a couple of springs. If you look at page 4 and 5 of our opening brief, and I'll read on page 5 of that brief, it says, when KBR test pump well 206, one of the applicant's wells in Kobe Valley, the production on Nickel Springs utilized by Echeverry decreased by a half, and it has not recovered years later. It is predicted that well 206 will see a drawdown of 205 feet at the end of the 44-year mine life. These were in the record below.
What financial assurances are contained anywhere here that the mitigation response would be economically forthcoming? In other words, is there bonding? Is there, how do you know? Like, let's say they go in and their fortune's sour.
Well, the 3M plan at page 11 talks about the financial assurances and funding. And it suggests that an initial funding will be done of $250,000, and then in Section B, $750,000 no later than the end of month of the 6 wellfield pumping.
But is there anything else beyond that?
No. And it doesn't say how it's going to be spent or what it's going to be used for. It says at the cessation of mining and groundwater pumping, the money's going to go back to KBR.
The $1 million.
You're right, and if any of it's left. So what if impacts occur after that?
Not go past the $1 million.
Right, or go beyond the $1 million.
Okay, well, thank you all. Excellent arguments and briefs from both sides. We appreciate the 60 minutes of argument. I think it will greatly help us look at all the issues in this case. The case will now be taken under submission, and we'll be in recess to 11:30 a.m.